Hey, everybody. This is Adam, co-host of the Pretty Scary podcast. Maybe you've heard of it. Don't worry, there's a new episode of Pretty Scary coming tomorrow. In the meantime, maybe you'd like to check out a new podcast from me and Carrie Martin, who you might also know from the Pretty Scary podcast. It's called Celebratragic. Each season, we take a deep, deep, deep dive into the life and times of some of history's most tragic celebrities. The first season is about Anna Nicole Smith. And all you have to do to hear the first episode in its entirety is keep listening. You're going to hear it right now. Even better, if you get done listening and feel like you want to hear more, you can do that right now also. Celebratragic is available on iTunes and Spotify right now, and will be on all the other platforms in no time at all. If you decide to give the second episode a listen, first of all, thanks. We appreciate it. Also, maybe leave us a good rating and review on iTunes while you're there. It helps. Anyway, we'll be back with a new episode of Pretty Scary tomorrow. In the meantime, enjoy the premiere episode of Celebratragic. Thanks. We love you.
Welcome to Celebratragic, a podcast about tragic celebrities, with your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Carrie Martin.
Hey, everybody, welcome to a new podcast called Celebratragic. I'm Adam Todd Brown.
I'm Carrie Martin.
We're your hosts. Carrie, this is going to be so fun. What was it? Are you expecting the Mariah Carey thing again? I mean, I guess we can make
it. Can we do Trim Spa or no? Trim Spa, baby?
At least for this season, I feel like we could.
Okay.
Like my body. This is a...
That's going to be our outro.
This is a spinoff podcast, I should say, maybe?
Yes.
From Pretty Scary.
Somewhere between Pretty Scary and Mariah Carey.
Right. We did Pretty Carey.
Right.
Which was a Mariah Carey podcast, kind of a biography podcast, a deep dive with judgments.
So somebody
I think is a good way to explain or describe it.
I would agree. So it pairs our love of true crime and celebrities and death and tragedy.
Right. This is a... kind of a biography podcast about various tragic celebrities, as the name implies. And when we were doing the Mariah Carey podcast, I think we teased a couple times that the next podcast we would do would be about Anna Nicole Smith.
Right.
And I realized that launching a new podcast every time, fucking nightmare. You got to come up with new artwork. You got to come up with new intro songs. Not for me. So instead of
somebody who just shows up, not for me either.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of doing a different podcast each time, we're just doing this podcast in seasons. And season one is about Anna Nicole Smith, who we've talked about a little bit on Pretty Scary, but not as in depth as we're about to talk about her now.
I talked about her relatively in depth on the episode about celebrity familial death in close time proximity.
One of the, probably still the best episode title to come out of the Unpops Network.
Slash my MBA, MFA dissertation thesis.
Right. It was, but we still, there's still so much about Anna Nicole Smith that we didn't get into.
Well, you're reading the book as you did with Mariah Carey, and so reading the notes, there was stuff that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, for the first thing that stands out to me in researching Anna Nicole Smith is all of the available source material out there is mostly written by people who have an axe to grind. Either that or people who were so close to her, they can't really be objective about what was going on. Like, she's the perfect person to start this podcast with. Like, right. She is a truly tragic figure.
I mean, I don't think there's ever been any like serious Barbara Walters-esque interviews done with her.
I looked. There weren't, because that would have been great, because so many of the books written about her, like I said, are written by people who have an agenda. So it would have been great if there was
money off of her.
Yeah. So it would have been great if there was like an hour long interview just with Anna Nicole Smith, but there's none of that because she was one of those people that no one wanted to talk to. They just wanted to look at her.
It does make you wonder, I don't want to say how much depth she has. That sounds callous, but I don't know. What am I looking for? Maybe what her IQ was?
Yeah, she's...
How much of it was drummed up for entertainment and how much of it was her?
Yeah, the people who write about her give you the impression that she was just dumb.
Right.
But there's no way that's completely true. Like, the things she accomplished in her life are still pretty impressive.
Agreed.
And,
but that's also kind of the LA Hollywood story, though, is you can take somebody that has an interesting backstory and they kind of fall into celebrityhood sometimes.
That is true. Like, she definitely always wanted to be a model.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know that much, but the way it all happens is pretty bizarre. And we actually get into all of that on the next episode. But yeah, the books that are out there, there are a bunch of them. One of the most famous is called Trainwreck, The Life and Death of Anna Nicole Smith. And it's written by a woman named Donna Hogan. Donna Hogan is a half sibling of Anna Nicole Smith. And this is her with another half sibling in an interview on Inside Edition back in the day at the height of Anna Nicole mania.
10 years after the shocking death of Anna Nicole Smith.
Or maybe it was 10 years after the shocking death of Anna Nicole Smith.
I still wake up feeling like I got robbed of a relationship with my sister. And
that's not going to change. That is not Donna Hogan. That is.
Hogan and Amy Chapman, who live outside Houston, are still haunted by memories of watching their famous sibling go from a voluptuous, fresh-faced model to a woman spiraling out of control, battling her weight and drugs. Both Donna and Amy blame Anna Nicole's handlers for not letting them get close to their sister.
She should have been in a hospital. She was that sick. She shouldn't have been traveling.
Then came devastating news. Anna Nicole was dead, accidentally overdosing on at least 9 prescription drugs. We were with Donna when she was turned away from her sister's grave in the Bahamas.
You hear that part?
It's hard not being able to
turned away from her grave.
Respects at somebody's graveside.
The sisters hope to connect with Anna Nicole's now 10-year-old daughter, Danny Lynn, who's being raised by her father, Larry Burkhead. They hope that will finally give them some closure. Her aunts have this plea for their niece.
I'm your aunt. I would love to meet you. And I love you from afar.
They do look alike, so I do get that they're sisters. You know who else they look like?
Who's that?
Hulk Hogan. And I think that's their real dad.
Yeah, that they do look. They do have a Hulk Hogan look to them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could be their real dad.
Can we also just say the pinnacle is to get onto Inside Edition?
Right.
I
didn't know Inside Edition was still on.
Oh, it's not? Well, if not, we need to bring it back.
No, I think it might be, but yeah. I didn't realize.
And somehow, you know, Mario Lopez is involved.
Oh, always.
Always.
Yeah, the thing about Donna Hogan, who, like, they mentioned in that video, she was turned away at Anna Nicole's grave. It's probably because she wrote a book called Trainwreck, The Life and Death of Anna Nicole Smith.
How can you be turned away? Like, aren't
well, Anna Nicole public? Smith, if I'm not mistaken, which I'll end up researching this when we cover her death, I'm sure, but I believe is buried in the Bahamas on like private land.
I know she's buried in the Bahamas next to her son.
Right. So I think it's like...
Oh, private property.
I think it's like private property and you can't just...
Smart.
Yeah. Keep the fucking Hogans away.
Anna. Yeah.
And Anna Nicole Smith, for her part, claimed she never even met Donna Hogan in her entire life. She doesn't deny that they're half siblings, but you know how it... Like, we'll get into her family history a little bit.
Very much like Mariah's sister.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, sometimes siblings are estranged. Sometimes, like... Anna Nicole Smith had 5 half siblings. So there's like people go live with other family members and things. And like, it stands to reason that she maybe never met Donna Hogan.
Did you happen to watch the Kevin Hart 6-part series on Netflix? I think it's called Don't Fuck This Up.
No, but I've heard it's, I don't love him as a comedian, but I've heard it's okay. Good as a documentary.
It is really good as a documentary, and it's a super easy watch. It's only 6 episodes, and some of them are like 25 minutes long, but it talks about some of his misguided tweets. It talks about him cheating on his pregnant wife. It talks about the Oscar scandal. It's really interesting. But he talks about how his dad was a junkie growing up, and they show his dad now who's got COPD and, who is clean and sober, and you know they're trying to rekindle a relationship, and he's like, you know, we're never going to be like super close, but he's still my dad. I'm going to make the rest of his years, you know, good.
Right.
He talks about growing up and how great his mother was, but she was militant, and so for a while he went to go live with his dad, and he goes, you know, there's all these like kids in this house, and he was like, you know, I've got all these half siblings, and I'm sure I don't even know them all. And he goes, the first thing my dad says to me is like, "Have you eaten yet?" And he was like, and Kevin's like, "Well, isn't that your job to feed me? Like, I'm a kid." So,
yeah,
anyway, it's really interesting. But I mean, kind of the same thing where I'm sure people are coming out of the woodwork. You know, Kevin Hart's huge and he's got a lot of money and he's very generous. And so now they're coming out like, "Oh, yeah, by the way, we have the same dad." Well,
yeah, you saw it with Mariah Carey, too. Mm-hmm. Remember her dad filed a lawsuit because he at one point briefly mentioned there should be a Mariah Carey doll and he tried to sue her for it. Like it's it definitely happens. I'm sure it'll be shady family members coming out of the woodworks will probably be the mascot of this podcast. Mm-hmm. We should have little plush toys made
like the Russian dolls, like
the acting dolls. Each one is just a different family member asking for money. That would be perfect. Another book that is out there about Anna Nicole Smith is called Anna Nicole Smith, Portrait of an Icon. And this one, I thumbed through it a little bit. And by that, I mean tapped to go to the next page on
your Kindle.
A Kindle, sure. Mm. It's written by two of her really close friends, and it's mostly about their relationship with her in particular, which I think will be more useful when we get into like the Anna Nicole Show years. Mm-hmm. But right now, like, as far as her early years, it doesn't help us that much.
Real quick, and I know we're going to talk about the Anna Nicole Show. There was only 2 seasons.
3, I believe. Oh, there were 3? Yeah, okay. There's 3, I think.
So I rewatched the Christmas episode because that one is my favorite, where she has little people dressed up as elves. Her cousin Shelley.
Oh, yeah.
Shelley,
I bought the DVD. Singing. It's on its
and
way.
And then she makes out with Margaret Cho. And Kathy Griffin is there. Again, you say D-list into the mirror 3 times and Kathy Griffin pops up somewhere.
Yeah.
And, but then the second episode I started to watch, and this was all on YouTube, was the one where she went to the dentist and she just kept complaining about how much she hated the dentist. And for some reason, inexplicably, Howard K. Stern is an emotional masochist who loves verbal attacks that Anna Nicole keeps launching on him, but it was hard to watch like all the whining. And I was like, I used to watch this every week.
I did too. I loved the Anna Nicole Show.
Rewatching was tough.
Yeah, we're going to do a bonus episode at some point where we kind of reflect on watching the Anna Nicole Show again after doing this podcast. And I feel like it's going to be dark. Like I feel like it's going to be kind of a grim experience.
We should dress Oh, you tell me your idea and I'll tell you mine.
Oh, I was just going to say after I'm done, we should sign the DVD and like send it out to a fan in return for like reviews. Like we'll do a thing. You leave us some reviews. We'll pick a name and send you a DVD copy of season 1 of the Anna Nicole Show signed by me and Carrie Martin.
Yes. And endorsed by Trim Spa.
Take that shit, the Pawn Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Tell me your idea.
We almost like yours, similar. We dress up in Santa suits.
Sure.
And then we drink whatever they drink.
Right.
During the Christmas special, which I believe was
Trim Spawn Xanax.
And Jägermeister.
I'm in.
Down in Ice Luge.
I'm way in.
And I hope that you at home will join us.
I would hope so. Build an ice luge. Get it ready.
As the one we're building in Burbank won't last long.
No, it won't. Not in this apartment once it hits May. It'll be a nightmare. So there are also competing books about the circumstances surrounding her death. One is called Blonde Ambition, and it's written by an award-winning journalist named Rita Cosby, who seemingly has no dog in the fight. So that will be an interesting resource when we get to her death. The other is called The Killing of Anna Nicole Smith, and it's written by a guy named Larry Seidlin, who, for all intents and purposes, is going to have his own entire episode in this Anna Nicole saga, because he was the presiding judge over this really crazy trial that happened after she died that was basically about custody of her body. And he is the...
Do you like my corpse, baby?
Finally lost the weight
and kept it off
for eternity. Eterna spa. So he very famously was made fun of on SNL and all sorts of late night shows and media outlets because he is the quintessential example of why court proceedings should not be televised. Like, he was so very clearly playing to the cameras and trying to get himself a TV job, which he did. Mm-hmm. Got a TV job like a year later. And it was just a fucking circus. And he wrote a book called The Killing of Anna Nicole Smith. So
you get a book and you get a book deal and you get a book deal.
Exactly. And as for her early years, there's lots of old newspaper and magazine articles floating around. But the book that seems like it comes closest to having a chance at being somewhat objective, and I put that in the notes, but it turns out I'm very wrong, is a book called Big Beautiful Doll, The Anna Nicole Story. It's written by Eric and DeAva.
I believe so. There's an apostrophe and a silent dollar sign.
Yeah, I think it's, I bet, you know what, looking at Diva. It, I bet it's meant to be pronounced Diva.
I bet it is.
You fucking asshole.
What a bitch.
Eric and Diva Redding, who are the Playboy Scouts who first discovered Anna Nicole as a model.
How do you get that job?
Playboy Scout? I have no idea.
Right?
As someone who worked for Playboy for a cumulative 2 years, I have no idea.
How? So did you ever meet Hugh Hefner?
I did not, but I went to the Playboy Mansion on Halloween 1 year, and he was like sequestered in this area. So I got to like stand there and look and go, oh yeah, it's Hugh Hefner.
You and Andy Dick away?
They kept everyone away. He was just surrounded by flocks Pussy. Of women. Yeah. And then it was him in this like VIP section, because they rent the Playboy Mansion grounds. They rent out for events mm-hmm. and shit. And someone threw a party at the Playboy Mansion grounds. And I actually, even though I worked for Playboy, I had to reach out to that company and be like, hey, if I cover this on a Playboy website, will you let me go to the party for free? And they did. The tickets were $1,500.
Did you get to go with anyone?
I took my girlfriend. Yeah. My girlfriend at the time. This was like 2010.
Yeah.
It was my second time in Los Angeles.
I think I went in 2006, and the tickets, it was just a jazz concert where he made a brief cameo appearance, and I was the only one who inexplicably got nude, and the tickets were $400 each.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's fun. Like it's an event to be able to say I've been to the Playboy Mansion was super fun.
And Bill Cosby's firm was all over the walls in the billiard mm-hmm. room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You scrape it off, put it in a little pouch, sell it on eBay. That's what I did.
Right.
So a lot of what we'll cover in these first two episodes comes from the details as relayed in that book, which again is a Big Beautiful Doll, the Anna Nicole Story. So let's talk about her early years. Kind of the reverse of Mariah Carey. If you're listening to this podcast, I would encourage you to go check out Pretty Carey also. It's a rip-roaring good time. Maybe we'll probably do another. We have to finish it. Like, there's no way we...
There has to be a part two because we glazed over Nick Cannon.
We didn't even get to... We finished at the Christmas album.
But I'm saying, even like in passing, we barely mentioned him, and he deserves more than a mention. He currently has a beef with Eminem, who we're going to have on season two.
I would not be surprised if we do a season about Eminem at some point.
I meant just a guest to talk about Nick Cannon on season two. I'm right, Gary.
Oh, no, that'll be, yeah, that's a no brainer. But maybe he'll be featured here too someday. So kind of the reverse of Mariah Carey, where with Mariah Carey, we know all the details of her early years. We just aren't quite sure when she was born, either 1969 or 1970. With Anna Nicole Smith, date of birth not in question, November 28th, 1967, born in Houston. That's in Texas. Mm. The rest, very sketchy details. And a lot of that stems from the fact that her mother, Virgie Hogan, really liked dudes named
Hulk.
Right. Hulk Hogan's mother, I think. It's Virgie Hogan is Hulk Hogan's mother.
Oh, so he's sisters with Anna.
Anna and Nicole. Hulk Donna. Hogan is Anna Nicole Smith's brother.
Okay. They both have stringy blonde hair, so that checks out.
Exactly. The thing is, she married two dudes named Donald. She really liked dudes named Donald. And Vicki Lynn Hogan, her father was named Donald Hogan. But later, Virgie married a guy named Donald Hart, at which point Anna Nicole's name was changed to Nikki Hart. And also confusing, at various points throughout history, Anna Nicole claimed Virgie was actually her aunt, and that Virgie's younger sister, Kay Beall, was her mother. And the genesis of that story is fucking horrifying. The reason Anna Nicole thinks Kay Beall was her mother is Kay went to live with Virgie at one point when she was 10 years old. Virgie and Kay are sisters. Donald Hogan is Anna Nicole Smith's father, was married to Virgie at the time. Donald Hogan rapes Kay Beall when she's 10 years old, and Anna Nicole Smith gets it in her head that her father impregnated her
aunt,
and the baby that was birthed as a result of that rape was Anna Nicole Smith. And the cover story for that was Virgie raised her as her own child instead. Very fucking dark. And the rape happened. Kay Beall was raped by Anna Nicole Smith's father, basically. But she was also like, I was 10. I couldn't give birth.
Yeah, it's very rare for a 10-year-old to have already had their period. So I can see that being the biggest caveat, I think, and I stand by the fact that Anna Nicole was hatched from a pod.
It makes more sense.
Right.
Because she's very different from the rest of her family.
You know what, though? If there's a lot of trauma and abuse in your childhood, you either become a serial killer or a Playboy model. So The fact that she fantasized, perhaps, that her Aunt Kay was her mother, I think it's something you do when you come from a background of trauma and abuse. You want to believe that your reality isn't your reality, so you make one up.
Right.
As that makes you, I guess, feel more comfortable. That could have been what happened.
Yeah, it seems like that's what happened. And it was probably fueled a little bit by the fact that when she became high school age, Anna Nicole moved in with Kay Beall. She moved to Mexia, Texas.
I think it's Mejia.
I don't. Because if it was Mejia, it would...
You think there's a J. But I feel like I've heard Anna in interviews call it Mejia.
Okay.
But maybe Anna's wrong too.
It flies in the face of everything I know from taking 4 years of Spanish in high school. But okay.
And you very well could be right. And Anna Nicole could be wrong.
But she lived there.
I know, but I don't think that means anything based on what a dumbass these authors make her seem to be.
They do go the extra mile in trying to make her seem like a brain dead idiot.
Right.
And
that's why I was kind of curious, and I'm not trying to make fun of her or anything, but I'm like, I do wonder what her IQ was. Is she really that stupid, or is it drummed up, you know, for TV or what? Like, that's kind of like her personality,
yeah.
But she's really not.
Like with Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton's not dumb.
Oh, absolutely.
But she knows when to act dumb.
And Kim Kardashian used to kind of play that way too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very much about sex and everything, and now... I don't know. Her and Kanye are like running for the White House.
Yeah, so. She's going to be our president someday.
Good on them.
She was by all. So she moves to Mejia, Texas, mm-hmm. Mexia, Texas. She moves to Texas, where she was already living, to attend high school. By all accounts, she was very unpopular in high school. She says it's because she was flat chested. And I mean, yeah, that'll do it, you know?
It will. I remember my breast grew when I was a sophomore in high school.
Oh.
And they literally went from training bra to like a full C. But like, you don't know what to do with them. And then guys start noticing you. And I remember crying and telling my mom I wanted a breast reduction because I was stupid. You don't realize
how much
they're going to benefit you.
Fucking gold
mine. Just a few years if you can hang on to them.
Yeah. Just stick through it.
My guess is that if she was unpopular, it's possibly more of an elitist thing. Again, I don't know. Maybe it was just a generally poor town, but she sounded like she's from the wrong sides of the tracks. And if people knew the history of her father raping her aunt, like.
Yeah, that could very well be. Either way, she was expelled in the 10th grade after getting into a fist fight with another student.
She seems like a scrapper.
Yeah. Never went back to school. That is the extent of her education.
I wonder if she knew she could come back, or does expelled mean like you're done?
I think it means you're just kicked out of that school. You can probably go to another school.
Maybe she didn't know that.
Maybe not. There's probably not a lot of schools in that town
either.
But there was a Jim's Crispy Fried Chicken. You ever been?
No, but it sounds delicious.
Yeah. Say on Pops to your waitress to save 15% on your bill.
Tenderloins there.
I hope.
God, that's West
Coast,
a dream.
West Coast Loins. This episode brought to you by West Coast Loins. Mm. When you need loins, West Coast Loins.
Is that a loin in your pocket? Or are you happy to see me?
Right?
It's a loin.
It's a loin. Eat it. She met and fell in love with a cook named Billy Smith while working at Jim's Crispy Fried Chicken. They married in April 1985, and that date is why we're basing this part of the podcast on this particular book, because I swear to Texas God, it's the only source that bothers to mention dates. Like, for all I knew, she met this dude in like 87, 89. No idea. Like, reading all these other sources. So now I have at least some timeline to work with. 1985 is when she meets and marries Billy Smith. And she claims Billy was jealous and controlling and physically abusive, which is probably true.
I feel like that's how Billies are, though.
Yeah, especially a Texas Billy at that age. And you land Anna Nicole Smith, who wasn't Anna Nicole Smith yet. But look at old pictures of her. She's got a face.
Right.
She's got a good face. She's always had a very good face.
She gives good face, yeah.
And so in 86, the couple had their first and only child, Daniel Wayne Smith, because that always fixes a bad relationship. Mm.
Yeah, I've got 18 children.
Yeah, same. She left with Daniel 6 months later and moved back to Houston with Virgie. Problem, since those two mostly hated each other, living together didn't work out. So Daniel lived with Virgie, and Anna Nicole Smith moved to a trailer park with her friend Deborah Hopkins.
So it seems weird that if you had this bad childhood with your mother, where your father, her first husband, raped your aunt, and my guess is, you know, Anna and her mother didn't get along. And so she had lived with Kay for a lot of her, you know, growing up years. If there's like abuse and stuff in that household, why would you leave your infant son there?
Yeah, that is a weird choice.
Yeah.
And just the fact that those two didn't really get along.
Right.
Like, but also at the same time, like as a mother, and I'm saying this as a mother.
Right.
If leaving the kid with Virgie is the better option, like I wouldn't fault someone for doing it because it's not like Virgie raped KB all.
Yeah, but it's also not like they had a good relationship. It just seems like an odd choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's that just moving back with her was an odd choice. If you really dig into their relationship, like they just didn't get along.
Right.
And this ends up, though, being... like, it seems unimportant, but this is actually a very important detail because the woman she moved in with, Deborah Hopkins, who was a friend and a hairdresser, Deborah Hopkins is the one who convinces her, hey, dye your hair platinum blonde. You'll be way prettier.
Which could have went a lot of different ways.
If it you sure could have.
Go to platinum blonde and you don't strip your hair first based on past learnings from my own hair, it turns a rusty orange.
Oh, gross.
And falls out.
Oh!
Not Playboy material, not even Hustler material.
Not even Gigi's Cabaret material.
Definitely not.
But yeah, this is the point where Vicki Lynn Hogan goes from, because if you look at early pictures of her, she's got like kind of brownish red hair, even though she would later go on to claim that her hair was natural, her breasts were natural. All lies, because the internet wasn't quite the thing it is now, so we couldn't verify these things. But this is the point where she goes platinum blonde and then immediately becomes a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you do with the platinum blonde hair.
Right.
When you're in...
You're not going to keep working at a chicken place.
Mahixia, Texas.
Mahia,
Texas. And interesting twist. The book mentions that Houston is just absolutely littered with dive bar type strip clubs. But the one Vicky Lynn Hogan Smith ended up at was actually pretty nice. It was called Rick's Cabaret.
Does sound nice.
And they describe it in the book as faux mansion decor with chandeliers and carpeting, good food and liquor, and dancers who are truly beautiful.
We should do one remote episode where we go and live pod from the different strip clubs she worked in Houston.
Here's the thing, Carrie. Because I owe the IRS so much money, I'm very bitter, and I am determined to write off my entire life in 2020. So I will absolutely book us a trip to Texas.
Oh my God, thank you. I was waiting for your butt to be a bad butt. Like, no, I'm not going to take you to any strip clubs, Gary.
We will pod about it, and every dime we spend, I'm going to write off on my taxes.
Okay.
I'm all for it.
No, it's a good thing you threw that out there in the ether.
So this club was frequented by a lot of rich and powerful types, including O.J. Simpson. So she dodged a bullet there. She didn't start at Rick's, though. You have to work your way up to something like that, Carrie.
I would assume.
First, she worked at a place brilliantly named Executive Suites.
That's like there's a strip club. So my territory for work is right by LAX, and there's a strip club called Jet Strip, aptly named.
That's pretty great. And judging from the people interviewed in this book, her fellow employees at Executive Suites were a bunch of misogynistic dirtbags.
Did you see that movie Hustlers?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I liked it, but they talk about when you're a stripper, there's all these people you have to tip out. So what you actually take home for your work sometimes can be minimal.
Right. That makes, I remember that. And yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it kind of sheds a little light on like this. I didn't put it in the notes, but they talk about her like having oral sex with the club DJ.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you should.
Well, it's like if you got to pay the guy, fucking blow him instead.
Oh, why it not? Was a or situation. That's the thing. It wasn't an this, and situation.
This whole section of the book, there's all the. This is the part of the book where I really started to sour on the people writing the book. Mm-hmm. There's all these allegations that she was using a bunch of drugs and sleeping with clients on the side. She is a stripper in Texas in the fucking 80s. Of course she's doing drugs.
Yeah, I think everybody in the 80s did drugs.
And all these people they interview are so fucking self-righteous about it. And it's like, you're the fucking DJ at a strip club. You took that blowjob from her. How fucking ethical are you, you goddamn sleazebag?
Yeah.
And it's all, like, I'm sure she was the only one doing drugs. Like, fucking come on. She's the only one that was ambitious. Fuck you, and fuck the people writing this book.
I mean, I would hope that you weren't stripping the 80s sober.
Yeah. And of course you're trying to get ahead in your career. You want to be a stripper until you retire? It doesn't happen.
I would think there's a time when you've got to stop stripping and hang up your heels.
Yeah, you want to plan for the future. And if that means you got to blow a 90-year-old, do it.
Cardi B was a stripper.
Right. Look and a criminal.
What?
She like admitted to like... she would sometimes tie a dude to a bed and rob him.
Good for her. I feel like that's very entrepreneurial.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm not going to be mad about it.
Yeah.
But still. And yeah, they treat all of this stuff like it's exclusive to her and you fucking know it's not. But either way, she eventually got good enough at her job to earn a daytime slot at Rick's. And she was pretty enough that the club owner, Dallas Fontenot, which is the most strip club owner name in the history of strip clubs, included her in their 1989 calendar. Twist, the picture of her, she's leaning over a car, and the picture's taken from the back, because also the reason she didn't have any night shifts at Rick's. Still didn't have them titties.
Yeah, I mean, I can.
So
that's a good tool for your trade.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have it.
But it's also a testament to her that she was already dancing at Rick's without that rack. Like,
have you been to a strip club?
Of course.
Okay, well, I know people who haven't. And it's also somebody who's an ingenue of strip clubs. And I like off hours.
I like off hours. I like a lot of eye contact when I'm getting a dance.
I like Sundays at 3 p.m.
I like a buffet at a strip club.
It's deaf, not their varsity squad. And that's fine. It's just basically a pack of blonde Asians. And then I just sit at the rail and ask them questions about their life.
Yeah.
A get to know you session, if you will.
I like a strip club.
And typically there's not a lot of people there. That's what I like.
Who doesn't like a strip club?
Yeah. I remember when I went to New Orleans and this one stripper, she was at the top and then she went to the bottom and did the splits. And in the middle of that, I believe when she was at the top, she took a match and like two matches, split them off, put them over her nipples, lit them on fire and then slid to the bottom.
That's there, art.
Right. And so afterwards I walked up to her and I was like, by the way, you were really good. Could I buy you a drink? And she's like, could you just give me money instead? And I was like, you know what? That didn't occur to me, but sure.
Very fair.
And here we are.
Yeah. So yeah, she was working at Rick's, but only during the day because she didn't have
dem titties.
Didn't have dem titties. According to Anna Nicole Smith, the legend she pushed while she was alive was that her breasts happened because she gained a bunch of weight when she had her first kid and then lost a bunch of weight, but the titty weight stayed.
So at what point did she have Daniel while she was stripping?
1986. We just mentioned it. She had it had him with Billy Smith, the cook she met at Jim's Crispy Fried Chicken.
Okay, so she didn't have tits when she was took the picture at Rick's stripping.
Right.
But then she had Daniel and got...
Well, what I'm saying is she lied. She lied.
Well, when I'm catching her in this lie.
When she became famous.
What I'm saying, Adam. I caught her.
You did.
We caught her.
We got her.
We did her. We did it.
We took her down. Finally, someone takes down Anna Nicole Smith. Mm. Yeah, that was always her story when she was famous.
Here's the other thing. If you breastfeed, then you get flat titties.
Mm.
Like National Geographic's.
Right? Mm. So she was lying.
Yeah. And you can tell. I mean, they're just way too perky.
Oh, yeah. Well,
to not be anything.
According to this book, and what seems way more likely, is she used her stripper earnings to get breast augmentation surgery.
Yeah. I think there was a paragraph in that book about O.J. Simpson actually gave her her breast implants.
Right. Yeah.
In Brentwood.
Yeah. She didn't want them. He just snuck up on her and gave them to her. His first crime. Whatever the case, this is the point where her topless dancer career really starts to thrive for some reason. I don't know why. But around this time, she starts dancing at a club called Gigi's and meets a fellow dancer named April Story Richardson. There's a really weird story regarding this where April and her husband drive Anna Nicole to the airport at one point, and Anna Nicole is so drunk, she is in the back seat and reaches into the front seat and just grabs April Story Richardson's husband's dick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's played off like no one really said anything. Anna got on her flight. But then they mention shortly after that, the marriage ended and he moved out and Anna Nicole Smith moved in with her. And this is the point in the book where all the lesbian allegations start.
She seems very lesbianic.
She does. And another thing I resent about this book, and here's the thing about this book. It was written while she was still alive. They updated it after she died. But this book was written kind of at the height of her fame, which means it was written in the 90s when it was still okay to write a book and act like someone liking girls who was also a girl was scandalous. And that's very much how they treat this. Like, can you believe she was sleeping with women? She was a stripper in Texas in the 80s. She's surrounded by beautiful women.
They're all closet lesbians in the 80s.
Yeah.
Did you see the shoulder pads?
And one of the things they suggest in here, as if it's scandalous, is that she would date men and basically use them for money and then spend that money on her girlfriends. And it's like, cool.
When did she get Daniel back?
Well, Virgie didn't take custody. He just lived there. So I don't think she ever lost custody of him. And they were in the same town. So he was just living there while she was, but I'm sure she saw him.
Right. I'm not trying to paint her as a bad mother, but in the Anna Nicole show, they're so close and he lives with her. So I'm just curious at what point, you know, she's spending money.
It wasn't this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of talk about her preferring women over men and that she would get money from men and give it to her girlfriends and fucking good.
And then you wrote in all caps, hot.
Hot. It is hot. It's very hot. But Gigi's is where Anna Nicole meets J. Howard Marshall II. Dude was rich. Here is what I did not know about J. Howard Marshall II's wealth. He owned 8% of Koch Industries. That Koch Industries, the Koch brothers, Republican nightmares, the Koch brothers. He owned 8%.
What do they make?
The Koch brothers, they're oil people above all else, but they're also, the Koch brothers are super politically active and politically active on the right, mostly. They are seen as basically villains in the United States by a whole lot of people. And that's the money she was marrying into. And I never knew that. In this book, they don't, like at the time, the Koch brothers aren't who they are now, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But I found that part really interesting. His net worth was estimated to be anywhere between $400 million to $3 billion.
That's fuck you money.
And the thing about J. Howard Marshall, his backstory is pretty crazy too. Beyond the fact that his money was Koch brothers' money, he was married for years to a woman named Betty, who eventually came down with Alzheimer's.
Now, how many times was he married? Like, was that the mother of his children?
Yes. I think Betty was his first marriage. But while he was married to Betty, she comes down with Alzheimer's and is a completely different person, obvs. And at this point, he takes up a mistress, a woman named Lady, who was also a stripper.
He had a type.
But didn't become one until she was in her early 40s. Inspirational much?
Means we can become strippers.
Right.
I say we apply when we're out there doing our podcasts.
Yeah.
So that way we can really get into the true essence of what Anna Nicole went through.
Which one of us has to blow the DJ?
We Rochambeau for it.
Both? Maybe we both. Same time?
Alternate.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds right.
Two hosts, one dick.
We'll film it. Bone Con. Marshall bought Lady cars and houses, and very importantly, at one point told his son Pierce that should he die, Lady was to be taken care of financially, so not murdered. He wouldn't marry her, though, because he didn't want to leave his ailing wife while she was ailing, which, that's fair. That seems like if you're going to go out and get a mistress, don't do the Newt Gingrich thing and like divorce your wife while she's dying of cancer in the hospital.
Would it matter though? You know, like they could still be friends. I mean, how is that the honorable thing?
I don't know.
Yeah, right? That's like big money problems.
But because of this, Lady wouldn't let Marshall in the house he bought her. And she also took up with a boyfriend.
She didn't want to, and that gave her an excuse.
Right. She took up a boyfriend of her own, a security guard named Dale Clem. Marshall found out about Clem after Lady died on the operating table while, say it with me,
getting breast augmentation surgery.
Of course. Just like Kanye West's mom, interestingly
enough. And
Joan
Rivers. What?
What? What happened?
Wait, was Kanye West's mom getting titties?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was getting, I think that's the cosmetic surgery she was getting.
Okay.
In her will,
let's just have him on and ask him.
We will. In her will, she left her estate, which was $5.8 million that she mostly got from Marshall, mostly to her kids, except for a diamond bracelet, a truck, and a poodle named Fancy, all of which were left to her boyfriend, Dale Clem, And this is the point where J. Howard Marshall finds out she had another boyfriend. And he was not impressed. He filed a lawsuit to get back all the money he spent on Lady, arguing he gave those gifts to her and not to her kids and her boyfriend. In court, he testified that she gave the impression that she was with him exclusively, and because she lied, was no longer entitled to any part of his estate. Kind of a stupid argument, but Lady's estate didn't have the resources to keep fighting, so the Marshall estate won in court, and he got most of his money back, except here's the rub. Way before this went to court, before Lady even died, Howard Marshall had already met and started a relationship with Anna Nicole Smith. So he was just being a butthurt fucking hypocrite.
That's how most guys are.
Oh, yeah.
Most guys with money.
Especially someone with that much money.
Right.
Like, that's the definition of fuck you money. Like, that is him spending fuck you money.
Mm-hmm.
Filing
and
that lawsuit.
And then rescinding it.
Yeah.
And then spending it again.
Well, no, spending the lawsuit money is him spending fuck you money.
Right.
Like, the $5.8 million was him spending I want to fuck you money.
So, I didn't know a whole lot about Jeffrey Edward Epstein. And then they had, I think it was on 2020, they just had like a 2-hour special on him. And they're talking about how he was, you know, a billionaire and he had all these islands and all the girls that he molested, et cetera. And then they showed some of his depositions and they talk about what a narcissist he was and how these high powered attorneys and even, I believe, the attorney general and then somebody who worked under Jose
Canseco.
Yeah. Yes. He worked under Donald Trump, I believe, Secretary of State.
I don't know. What do you mean? Where are we going?
So they were just talking about how there are these high powered officials. And essentially, when these rape allegations were brought up against and kidnapping charges were brought up against Epstein, that essentially they were all gung ho at the beginning. And then all of a sudden, the charges just kind of trickled away. And when the girls who were molested, who were like, yeah, we want to go to court and like testify and watch. And they're like, oh, no, this was settled out of court.
Oh, yeah.
He just did one charge of kidnapping and one charge of something else. And he got like, I don't know, a year in like a county jail where he also got work release. And it just, money buys you things.
It definitely does. And in this case, it buys you time with Anna Nicole Smith. They met after he stopped in for lunch at Gigi's Cafe. He had lunch at a strip club. Because when you're rich, you throw money at naked women while you eat food. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. Or you don't get full. Every time he'd meet her at Gigi's for lunch, he'd give her anywhere between $500 to $2,000. But at first, their relationship was just that. Him giving her money at the strip club whenever he showed up. Around the same time she met him, something equally important happens. She responds to an ad in Health and Fitness magazine, and it completely changes her life. And that's what we're talking about on the next episode. But for now, she met J. Howard Marshall II. So this seems like a good place to stop. This is a thing that'll come up later in the series of episodes about Anna Nicole. But I want to ask the question now. What do you think about her argument that she didn't marry J. Howard Marshall until she was famous and had money of her own? Does that make it better? I kind of think, because the allegation was always that she was a gold digger who was just after her money. And like with Kirk, take Kurt Cobain, for example. Whenever it's mentioned that he was maybe murdered and that Courtney Love maybe would have done it, maybe would have had a financial motive to have him murdered, people are like, Courtney Love has money of her own. No, she didn't. At that time, the whole album that everyone knows and loves wasn't even out yet. Courtney Love had Kurt Cobain's money. Anna Nicole Smith, on the other hand, by the time she marries J. Howard Marshall, she's already Anna Nicole Smith. She's already rich. Like, she's already a guest model. She's been in Playboy. She's been in movies. That's when she decides to marry J. Yeah, Howard Marshall.
But if you don't know if your career is going to be fleeting, and here's a guy with a lot more money than you have, and essentially like a good reputation, you know, he comes from like oil and...
Yeah, but also that was...
It gives you more longevity.
It certainly does. It's definitely...
And you know he doesn't have long.
Right.
And I don't know if it was mentioned in the book where they talk about the relationship where he was so old, like he would like wet himself and stuff. And she definitely kept her distance. And I think the most she ever really did was like kiss him.
But that was his thing. Like
wetting his pants?
Well, no, he knew by this point And I think it probably extended to his relationship with Lady too, who was like, she was in her 40s, but it's not like she was an old woman compared to him. Like, he couldn't fuck. He was too old. Like, he liked watching two women go at it. And like, so at that point, what do you want her to do? Like, she can't fuck him because he can't fuck. So they can like kiss a little bit and she can go down on a stripper and he can watch.
So then what
and
would
that's
be,
how he wanted to end his fucking life.
Right. But what would hit
I'm determined
his,
to start doing heroin if I hit 90.
I mean, that's really the time.
Yeah.
What would be his incentive for getting married?
He gets to see Anna Nicole Smith go down on.
But you don't have to get married for that. You know, like you probably could throw money her way and not get married, because then what it did, and I'm sure he's smart enough as a businessman to know this, things get weird in court. I mean, he just went through his own thing with Lady's boyfriend. So, and it played out with his kids fighting her for years.
Yeah. For a
long time.
Wasting
all that money and a huge back and forth about who the money should go to, unless he's just a pot stirrer and he wanted the drama. He's laughing from above or below or wherever he's at.
He was a fucking character.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And like,
I feel like a lot of rich people are eccentric.
Oh, yeah. Like at some point you're going to get bored having that much money. Like you can do anything you want. You can go out and do it. And like, shit's going to get wild. Like, imagine if either of us had $500 million.
Yeah. I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Like, if I won the lottery, you're hosting this podcast with Jeff from now on.
And Chet.
Yeah.
So you're in heaven and I'm in hell.
Yeah. Like, this whole thing. Like, I'm going to write someone's...
This whole shebang.
This whole thing goes to someone else, and I go to my tower.
Okay.
And that's where I spend the rest of my days.
I mean, technically, you don't have to have this podcast at all unless you want some sort of legacy.
To have a tower, I do. Well, if I win the lottery, then no.
Yeah.
So then, yeah.
Right.
Then my legacy is the way I spend my money.
I could see you being one of those assholes that gives all your money to like
a cat or a dog.
Winter.
That we're putting a long life expectancy on Winter or a short one on me. Probably the short one on me, huh?
Yeah.
Mm.
And then it'd be one of those where somehow Angie'd get iced out and we'd have to start a GoFundMe for her.
Yeah, there'd be a lawsuit. There'd be lawsuits and things, but that's what I want. I want chaos when I die. So that's episode one. Next, we're talking about the Playboy years. Spoiler alert, that's what that ad in Health and Fitness magazine was about. And that's also, it's really the point where I start taking issue with the book that we're covering right now, which is called Big Beautiful Doll, The Anna Nicole Smith Story.
It's really shitty authors.
Yes. But for now, that's our episode. This was fun.
Yeah, it was good.
It's a good first episode. I'm excited about this podcast. I'm excited about who we're going to cover in the future. I'm excited about talking about Anna Nicole Smith more. Do we have anything to plug before we get out of here?
I don't think so. I think just if you're in Burbank, you should stop by West Coast Loins.
Stop by West Coast Loins.
Buy one, get one free on Wednesdays.
Give us good ratings and reviews on Yelp. Give this podcast good ratings and reviews on iTunes. And
you will be submitted to win an autographed copy
of the Anna Nicole Show Season 1 DVD. All right. Should we get out of here?
Let's do it.
Carrie, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.